We are burning down the house here every Wednesday on the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. But you already know that because you found us through the genius of the internet or on iTunes or on HeritageRadioNetwork.com's RSS site. This is our episode number 39, I believe. Wow. How the hours fly by. For 29th of September 2010, and I am Curtis B. Wayne, architect and your host. This evening's episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch, which is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor, and I can tell you, at the Heritage Radio Network party this last Saturday, I had some of their ribeye. It was incredible. That's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, go to www.hearstranch.com. You know, they have a 151,000 acres. Oh, thank you. We are hosted by Roberta's Restaurant at 261 Moore Street, and one of the perks of hosting and participating in Heritage Radio Network is that we get to partake of Roberta's fantastic pizzas. Joining us in studio as Vox Populi, one of our neighbors here in the East Williamsburg Industrial Park, Eliza Pearson.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for joining, Eliza.
Thank you. Oh, no.
And she's here to, something comes up that an ordinary person, because
she's very ordinary.
Because she's not an architect, she's a screenwriter. Is that correct?
Yes, and an artist.
And you feel free to speak up.
A photographer.
And a mom.
Yes. We
applaud parenthood. It's very good.
I have Thank you.
Three children. And lucky for me, they're all out of that. No, wait a second. They're all
what
welcome.
What did you say?
Well, now I want this evening to revisit briefly a theme that we have spoken with previously in Burning Down the House, which is what we do and we do not learn in architecture school. And one of the aspects of what is not really taught particularly well is how to build. From the Architect's Newspaper, you listeners will remember that Julie Yoveen, the executive editor of the Architect's Newspaper, joined us here in Burning Down the House on July 28th or 24th. We have to look that up. Anyway, at the end of July, and she's a good friend of the program, and she's plugged us a little bit, so we're going to plug them. Remember, the Architect's Newspaper is available to all registered architects in the New York metropolitan area, and also in the Midwest, and on the left coast, because there are three different editions. This is the New York edition of September 22nd, 2010. A letter to the editor.
Well, can an ordinary citizen get a hold of this?
I think you'd have to pay, or find a friend who is an architect and use their license number, which is required. And you can, there's a form you can fax. I mean, they're working on distribution. It's also available online at archpaper.com.
Okay.
So here's a letter, and it says, "Licensed to learn. Education to have validity must have value. Does earning a degree in architecture have value as preparation to be a maker of real, physical, built things? Or is it merely to be seen as a course in architectural appreciation? With all the glory showered upon people who have either failed to pass the architectural registration examination, or are too slothful, or don't believe the trivialities of law apply to them, and there are many of these, What is the point of any student striving to achieve the legal status of being able to call oneself an architect? The dark side of architectural education is that period of time after graduation, during which the presumption is that one's employer, if indeed it's possible to find an employer these days, will take on the responsibility of teaching the newly minted graduate A, how to build, B, how to build a practice, and C, how to negotiate the legal and regulatory pitfalls of practice. Increasingly, this paradigm is failing, for according to data from the National Council of Architectural Registration Boards, it now takes, on average, 12 to 15 years from graduation to successfully completing the ARE, a process originally envisioned to take no more than 3 years. Is this a failure of the system or a symptom of apathy? I have no answer, but the stats are appalling. In part, I believe it's that we have lost the art of passing down the accumulated knowledge in the studio, owing to an overweening reliance on the computer. It has killed the studio ethic of continual and experienced feedback. The gestalt of viewing an image on a screen is entirely different from that of viewing a drawing. Sure, licensure is great, and it's a worthy first step, but what do we architects know about building? Only what our work experience has taught us. It would have been nice to have learned more of the art of building in school. Eugène Viollet-le-Duc at the French Academy in Rome, circa 1867, said that construction and aesthetics must not be separated. We must know how to build, and this must be taught in school. Let's see who wrote this. Gee, what a surprise. Curtis B. Wayne, architect and host on the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you, Julie, for running my letter. Now, one of the things that we seldom encounter in an undergraduate architectural curriculum is the science and engineering of acoustics. And it's true. I mean, there's so much to learn that acoustics is either something that people like Nat Wiener would have learned. By the way, Nat Wiener is our engineer this evening, and we are produced and tagged by Dan Brindell. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm sure you can't learn about acoustics on the computer also, so that's a very experiential thing.
It could be a Socratic course, which would drive you nuts, which was in the case of Nat's experience, or it could be a lecture course, because there's some pretty pithy mathematics that need to be
gotten
into.
That's true, yes.
By the way, feel free to have some pizza if you like.
Oh, thank you.
Because I've discovered that I can't stuff myself full of pizza and talk at the same time. It's a really
I may have to wait as well.
It's a disgusting acoustical experience. But I was fortunate in that I decided, when there were no jobs after I graduated, in an economy much like today's, rather than take the rather tempting job of managing an indoor plantation in the Florida Keys.
Interesting.
You know, ferns and palms and ficus trees that were so in vogue at a certain time. That was the era of the fern bars that you see in aged Woody Allen movies. Rather than spend a couple of years basking in the Florida Keys suns, and there were no architectural jobs, I decided to go to graduate school, and at a school where, in fact, the science of acoustics was invented by a Harvard professor, Wallace Clement Sabine. So I'm going to, in the do-it-yourself spirit of Heritage Radio Network's other programs, such as Chef Dave Arnold's cooking issues and Erica Wide's cooking program, to impart some technical knowledge this evening. And we'll talk about acoustics, a quick primer in urban acoustics, and then we'll get down to some thorny issues of what you can and cannot do about your neighbor's hip-hop habit.
That's actually very pertinent, because having a young child, I'm always concerned about the noises of, you know, running back and forth, the people below.
Absolutely.
Throwing things on the floor.
Oh, that's right.
Am I paranoid? I don't know.
No, you just want to live a sane life, because sound can be very disturbing. We'll talk about some of the different aspects of different frequencies, what transmits through the air and through the structure. We'll get to all of that. I mean, there's no arguing that New York is a noisy place. One of the greatest luxuries afforded the super rich is super quiet. The rest of us just have to deal.
Very true.
Which happens to be one of the reasons that I've opted out. Now I live in a cottage about 35 miles away with air all around and nobody on the other side of the wall. Yeah, it's okay. But even there, a couple of weeks ago, a pair of F-16 fighter jets did a flyover. They were on their way to the U.S. Open. And it scared the fuck out of everybody. Because they were only flying at about, it looked like they were only about 500 feet off the deck. I mean, they were really low, and they were really noisy. And when they made a second pass, people were calling the police and, you know, are we under attack?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what the animals thought as well.
There were a lot of yapping dogs. It's true. It's true. But even today, in Manhattan, for example, a hovering helicopter in Midtown will get people really upset after, you know, after 9/11.
Sure.
So the nature of sound is that in order for it to be perceived, it involves energy moving through air. If you wanted to have a perfectly quiet house,
you'd have to be dead.
You could seal up your windows and pump out all the air, because in space there is no sound.
That's true, but you'd also have to never move, is that
correct?
Well,
you'd also have to get a new change of clothes from NASA with a really good oxygen supply, but it would be quiet, you know? So let's get down into some science. The speed of sound is 740 miles an hour at standard temperature and pressure, which is at 32 degrees Fahrenheit and one atmosphere of pressure. That's at, you know, basically at sea level. Warmer air conducts noise faster and colder air slightly slower. So you might say, well, what about the wind? Could wind, you know, blowing a certain way, carry sound away, carry noise away? Well, not unless the wind was flowing faster than the speed of sound, which would be
really
so
is that
really
just a myth? Because I feel like people talk about sound being carried. Like, what does that mean? Is there such a thing, or is this just...
It's possible that sound could be carried in the direction of the wind flow,
but
certainly
bouncing,
not away.
Is it bouncing off of objects or something?
Sound is in the air, and if the wind is bringing air towards you, it could bring sounds towards you. But it certainly couldn't blow fast enough to blow it away, you see.
I see.
Now...
otherwise, we'd have huge fans blowing at the edge of the city.
That's right, just to make everything quiet.
Quiet.
Right. So, but if you're inside your house and you have a party, as a matter of fact, if you open a window, the sound pressure will go down, because the most absorptive, surface, you can absorb sound and thereby diminish the amount of noise in a room.
Uh-huh.
With, you know, fuzzy things like your clothing and carpets and stuff like that. An open window is 100% absorptive. Sound goes out and it doesn't come back.
But you said, does it go down? Does it because of the ground?
It just dissipates.
Okay.
It is diffused.
I see.
So it goes out and it doesn't come back. Now, it might diffuse and bounce off of other buildings in your neighborhood. And that's a kind of what is called flanking noise. It goes out and it goes around like a flank maneuver, like the army. Goes out, goes around laterally, and it'll go back then into your neighbor's windows.
It can go
or
back
vice
in?
Absolutely,
someplace.
Because it's a wave pressure. It's like water just flowing. It's all wave pressure. So if you have,
and it's shameless, I suppose.
Absolutely,
if it's going right in people's windows.
Well, it's a. I mean, you know, if your neighbors across the air shaft are having an argument that you're enjoying, that's that noise coming out of their window, being diffused, bouncing around, and coming back in your window, because it's like air pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have a noisy neighbor, you can close your window and That helps a great deal. Alternatively, if you, back to the, well, we can't have a vacuum, but we could have a condition called an anechoic chamber, A-N-E-C-H-O-I-C, which is something that we use as a test facility. If you filled your ceiling and walls and also your floor with 3 to 6 feet of sound-absorbing foam, all noise in your space would be absorbed.
So has anyone done this?
Absolutely. Nat, could you play the... here's someone putting on a latex suit in an anechoic chamber. I think that's enough. That's what getting dressed in the morning would sound like if you were in a in your bedroom that was perfectly.
That's what it sounds like every morning when I put on my red latex unitard.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. Now the human ear is sensitive across a wide spectrum of frequencies of sound, from about 50 cycles per second, or we call them hertz, after the German scientist Hertz, up to 10 to 17,000 hertz. The younger you are, the better your high-frequency hearing is going to be. That's one of the things that age degrades, is your high-frequency hearing. Low-frequency hearing diminishes somewhat, but the sounds that we are most sensitive to are the frequencies around 1,000 hertz. That's 1,000 to 1,500 cycles per second. That's where human speech happens. And so most of our construction is designed to block the transmission of vibrations, one side of the wall vibrating into the other side of the wall. And now there are, people with tinnitus, or if you're in a very noisy neighborhood, one way to feel happier about your acoustical environment is to have masking noise. Some people will run fans in
the
house.
Oh, and those sound machines.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
Therapist's office. I've never been in one, but I hear they
and
have
so,
them in there.
And so acoustical engineers have... I've been to plenty.
They, I'm joking.
They turn on the fan in the hallway so you can't hear what the crying in the room while you're waiting for the next session. So acoustical engineers have devised artificial masking noises. There's white noise, which is most widely used. There are also, depending on the work or living environment, there's also something called pink noise. And there's also brown noise.
And so now, if you could, actually,
they
ask,
do use this.
Like, I want you to give me pink noise when you build my office.
Well, usually the acoustical consultant will recommend. So if not, you could run the next little clip. Not that one. Did we lose the pink, white, pink, and brown noise? I'm gonna have to just.
Well, those, that would certainly...
I believe there was never any white, pink, or brown noise, but I can generate some right now with my mouth.
That would be great. Okay. That's good white noise. That's good.
What was pink like?
Pink is just, it's a lower frequency. Pink is more like... And then brown is...
So it sounds like... Pink sounds like a cow exhaling, and brown.
No, that's
like
just my rendition of it.
Oh.
But we use these for different purposes to mask sometimes the flanking noise that will be going out and back in.
So does it actually physically?
It confuses our ears? It confuses our brain.
Okay.
Also, basically, the different, like, white noise is all frequencies equally, and pink and brown make changes to different frequency spots depending on how you hear it.
Right.
Oh. So they actually physically interact with the other sounds or the other frequencies or something?
To kind of. Help me here, Nat, to help confuse the brain so that we're not paying attention to the noise that we don't want to hear?
I mean, basically, it's all frequencies at once. So, you know, something like a human voice is a select few frequencies and their overtones. So if you've got all frequencies covering that, you're not going to hear the specific things that make you think, oh, human voice or oh, rap music.
Because it just fills everything kind of
exactly,
all.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, right. So now we can have a little break music apropos of voices carrying.
Oh, I love this song.
Down the house. Heritage Radio Network, brought to you by Hearst Ranch. You know, I'm not going to read the canned Hearst Ranch thing. I know the people from Hearst very, very well. 151,000 acres of grassland on the Pacific coast since 1865. William Randolph Hearst's father started this after he made his fortune in the gold rush. And they've been raising grass-fed and grass-finished cattle there ever since, and it is really fine, fine, fine beef. And they are a very good friend of Heritage Radio Network. And we have enjoyed some of their beef, and I have to tell you, it is superb. Their ranch has more acreage than all five boroughs of New York City. I mean, imagine how large that is.
Sounds like Eden.
Yeah, and it's right there on the Pacific Coast, and it's protected land, and it will never be developed.
Beautiful.
And Brian Kenny, the ranch manager, was here for a party, and he's a big, tall, cowboy kind of dude, and he was serenading us, playing the studio guitar, playing cowboy sounds, and it was a fabulous event. And those of you who missed it can see pictures on the Heritage Radio Network home web page, so you can get a notion of the wonderful tribal collective aspect.
They're putting that some message.
Sign language? What are we doing out there? Hi. You have to understand that the studio is in the garden, and people drop in, people drop out. There's always a
picture window here in front of us, and you see that
slightly controlled mayhem always reigns.
Denizens of this beautiful urban oasis.
And neighbors. That's right. So I like the lyric of that, you know, hush, hush, down, down, voices carry. It reminds me of a fight I had with a former girlfriend. It's like, keep your voice down. It's like, people will hear.
People will know that's how crazy we are.
That's an example or an illustration of air flanking noise. Now, living in an apartment, what can you do about that? Close your window, turn on the air conditioner. Get some of that white noise or pink noise going to distract you from people out on the street. Because your brain will focus on the constant pressure of the masking noise. There's another kind of flanking noise, and that is noise that is structure-borne. The lower frequencies will travel right through the floors or through a wall between, you know, it's usually your bedroom, and in previous days is probably your elderly neighbor with their TV set backed up right against your wall with a coming through the wall.
Or the guy who rides motorcycles who's so used to really loud sounds that he puts the bass, like,
that's right,
you know, speaker, everything.
And then there's the people who scrape the chairs across the floor up above. Let's hear a little scraping misery. There you go.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, who hasn't suffered that, right?
Sounds like a saw.
In terms of being able to manage your environment when it comes to structure bound born sounds, and I'll get back to the airborne sounds a little bit later again. If you live in a co-op and you have a just perpetually noisy neighbor upstairs stomping around, some people just have that Bigfoot problem of as they walk on their heels.
Yeah, they kind of like drag their feet. And
or even you might have stiletto heels, or there might be a dog that prances back and forth over the parquet floor. It is possible inside your own space to have a second ceiling installed hanging off of a metallic resilient, or in other words, bouncy clips. That can be done. Depends on your willingness to spend your own money.
Yeah.
Now, if we're talking about a rental apartment, almost all New York City, in any case, residential leases require you to cover a certain amount of the bare floor with rugs.
Really?
Yeah.
I never read that part. What else does it say in that lease that I've never read?
It probably says, Lord, that, you know, your landlord has droit de seigneur or something like that. But,
yes.
And yet, your firstborn child must be given in slavery.
When are they coming to get her?
But no, you can you can attempt to enforce that clause that is in many leases and make your neighbors put rugs. That's where the delicate art of neighborly negotiation gets involved. Some people just like, I don't want to do it, or I'm allergic to rugs. I have to have all bare wood floors.
Oh yeah, because that allergy thing is some people.
Yeah, really believe in that, right?
Way, way out there on that allergy.
Now
trip.
Again, if you own your apartment and you have a noisy next door neighbor who isn't going to be going away any sooner than you are, it is also possible to add a second layer of wall in areas where noise is coming through. So what happens is that the two ways that noise will get from some other place into your apartment. One is if there are air gaps anywhere in a demising partition between apartments,
mm-hmm.
that is a sound leak. If air can go
really?
Through, oh, absolutely.
I would have thought that the air would like buffer and add sort of.
Nope.
No. Oh my.
Nope.
If it makes it worse.
If there's it's like if you watch the old war movies where they have a speaking tube on the bridge.
Oh.
And they're calling down.
Oh, and it's
a path.
Essentially, oh,
any air
funnels
that can move
sort of.
Through a partition is a sound path.
Huh.
So
it kind of acts like water, sound waves.
Yeah,
the whole wave,
it'll leak through.
I see.
So
it's actually it's not waves. It's a rarefaction. So it's like a slinky going back and forth. It's smushing.
Thank you.
Oh my
doctor.
Wow.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it is like a slinky, but it is.
But it's.
But any air that can move through the partition will be conveying sound energy. And so, if we're called in to look at improving the acoustical performance of a demising partition between two apartments, we'll start by looking to make sure that there are not electrical outlets that are back to back, because an electrical box is in terms of air is porous.
Wow, something that small can.
Absolutely.
My goodness.
Absolutely, because the human ear is very sensitive.
Yeah.
And there may be gaps along where the outside wall is that can be sealed up.
Yeah.
But then, the really ultimate thing is to build yourself a second wall. Now, I worked with a voice teacher on the Upper West Side who's. Neighbors really were getting at wit's end over the sound of his grand piano
mm-hmm.
and his opera singers.
Yeah.
And so what we did was build with a cavity between the original structure and a new airtight partition. In that cavity, we hung sheets of lead suspended from the ceiling as dampers to absorb vibration in
this
there.
This architecture stuff is really interesting.
Yeah, it was like a mass damper. It was like any
lead,
vibration that got into that sealed off cavity excited the lead sheets.
No, but seriously, I love this use of different materials. I would never have expected, you know, lead.
Yeah.
I mean, you should almost show the lead. It's so beautiful. I mean, it's like,
well, it wouldn't have worked.
It wouldn't have worked
unless it was trapped inside this airtight chamber.
Yeah.
So that the vibration, once it got through this new partition, would excite the very heavy sheets. And so what happens is, and this happens with all acoustic material, is the movement of the air is converted into heat energy and thereby absorbed and not transmitted further.
Wow. So lead is absorbent.
Well, that was an extreme case.
Oh. Well, I like that. That's
in
really
most
cool.
cases when we're building an acoustic partition, we will fill it with a fiberglass batting, because the motion of the air will cause the interstices, the little intersections of the fiber, to rub against each other and turn into heat energy. So it goes from acoustic energy to heat energy and then is not further transmitted elsewhere.
All very, very interesting to hide these things because it's very evocative visually, to imagine these goings on behind the walls.
Well, that's why we like to draw, because it shows what our ideas are.
Well,
that's
Curtis, how we I have to excuse myself. It's been very nice.
Thank you, Eliza.
I want you to continue.
I hope to see you again.
Show you will, and I'm going to, I think, crawl underneath the...
We can just walk right past.
Walk past.
But you have to take your phones off.
That's very true. Okay. Goodbye.
Come back soon.
I will.
Down the house. That was, of course, the rock classic Mississippi Queen by Mountain. And as sometimes happens in college, we get into dorm stereo wars. And because Mountain is, their music is designed to be played very, very loud, the thought was that it would blast through the walls and, you know, conquer whoever was blasting on the other side. But that music has frequencies all in the middle, and our typical construction is designed to defeat transmission of those frequencies. It's the low frequencies that go straight through the structure and are very, very difficult to defeat. Matter of fact, if you have a better quality stereo system, you'll have a separate low-frequency woofer speaker, which is designed to sit on the floor and turn your floor structure into a vibrating surface, because low-frequency wants to be conveyed through heavy mass because of the quality of its frequency. Matter of fact, these days you can even buy transducers. It's like the electrical activating portion of a loudspeaker that you attach to a surface, and you could turn your glass coffee table into a loudspeaker with a hockey puck sized transducer. It's very interesting what can be done acoustically. Now, we found out through trial and error that the kind of music that really works if you're having a dormitory stereo war is something more akin to the bass line played by Jack Cassidy, the famous bass player, also known as God, in this Hendrix Voodoo Child. As you can hear, that's going to be just pounding right through the wall, or the floor, or the ceiling, making misery everywhere except for you, who are enjoying the music. And if you have a neighbor who just has a need to have to crank it up to 11, there is not a great deal you can do to defeat bass sounds. In theory, you could apply absorptive materials, very thick, because fuzzy materials, fiberglass, wool bat, cotton batting, the thicker it is, the more capable it is of absorbing lower frequency sounds. So if you have a party, and there are a lot of people talking, the sound energy in your room will be absorbed by the people's clothing. One person is equivalent to a couple square feet of open window. But that's that human language frequency in the middle of the acoustic spectrum. The really low frequency stuff, in order to absorb the energy that your neighbor is transmitting through the structure into your space, would require very thick treatment on your walls. And then it's only absorbing and thereby diminishing your received transmission of low frequencies. It's not stopping it. That is one of the problems of modern life and modern electronic reproduction equipment. You know, in days before, if you lived in one of these grand old Upper West Side apartments with a heavy brick arch floor structure, of course your floor is somebody else's ceiling and so forth, ordinary sounds of people singing or playing the piano would not transmit through the structure other than just a faint sort of background noise. And the city is plenty busy as a provider of that background milieu. Mostly in the older days, if you heard your neighbors, it was because the window was open and sound dispersed and flanked and it came back in. If your neighbors are having a cocktail party and you don't like the din of the voices, you might try closing the window that's nearest to their open window. Increasing the distance between open windows helps that sound energy dissipate. But then, you know, with the age of hip-hop, we have a whole style of expression that relishes the very lowest frequencies of hearing, There's really no way around that. Nat, you found a really great example. Play a couple minutes of that if you could.
Real quick, as just a side note, this is like looking at a photo of Niagara Falls versus being in Niagara Falls, because we're playing it from YouTube. All the power in the song is from 0 to 80 hertz, which YouTube subtracts, but it'll give you a good idea of what it sounds like.
Thank you. Wow, I felt like that was a drive-by of one of my local Institute for the Deaf with their bazooka blasters and their little pimped-out Scion car. You recognize this. Even a passing automobile with souped-up car stereo will shake the air in the street so hard that your windows will rattle. And there's really nothing you can do about that. It's all part of the experience of having to live in an urban environment. But on an ordinary level, as a matter of consciousness raising, for all of us to be good neighbors, we should be aware or self-aware of the noises that we're making for our neighbors by walking around on the parquet floor in stilettos, or having dogs scamper around and not having area rugs. Because when we look at, to change the subject somewhat, when we look at new construction, of course, the New York City Building Code requires an impact isolation system to be installed in floor construction. That is to say, it's rated from zero to infinity, but an IIC rating of 50, which means that it will resist the transmission of 50 decibels, which is a unit of acoustical power, between one floor and the other. And the way we test it is we'll put a tapping machine on the floor surface, and then we'll measure the sound level in the adjacent space. And the best way to do that is to have the floor surface be physically floating with cork or some other compressible material over the structure. And for that top, it's usually parquet floor in New York. It's what we like, a hardwood floor. It must not touch the walls, because otherwise the impact of things dropped or people walking on that floor surface will be transmitted to the walls, which are in solid contact with the structure, and we'll get flanking sound from the veneer to the walls into the rest of the structure. So it must be on a somewhat cushy, isolating layer. And that's a very effective way to keep one family's sounds from, you know, getting into the structure and annoying people throughout. Because once sounds are into the structure, they will radiate through the entire integrity of the structure, and something dropped on the floor three apartments over upstairs, you will hear. And so we really work very hard to try to isolate the surfaces to keep people sane and happy with these lower frequency sounds, because the human ear is more sensitive at the lower frequencies to less energy than at the higher. It's just a part of human physiology. So in summary, you can make your room more quiet in terms of the sounds that you're generating or the sounds that come in the middle of the hearing spectrum by having sound-absorbing materials. Rugs, tapestries, upholstery, fuzzy things, things that are porous to air, where the sound energy can enter in and cause the fibers to rub together and dissipate that sound energy. When it comes to the low frequency sounds that come through the structure, I mean, for example, if you live above a bar, you could ask the bar owners to please put their speakers on resilient mounts that bounce. But still, if those speakers are still close to the ceiling, the sound that they're generating will be bombarding the structure. It will be less of that low frequency thump, 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 thump coming through your floor than if they were rigidly attached to the structure, but you'll still hear it. And so your choice is get used to it or move. If your neighbor has a high-end stereo and they have a woofer section, you might ask them to please put it on top of a small area rug. Of course, it won't work for them as well as it should, but it'll certainly help a lot in terms of your having to hear the the earthquake sound effects, you know, as they're watching one of those apocalyptic movies or something like that, which is designed to be disturbing in terms of the sound design. It doesn't mean that someone who's not watching the movie really is going to want to be disturbed. So that's just off the top, just a simple summary of some of the things that have to do with urban acoustics. And I really don't have a lot more to say this week, other than next week I'm going to have a couple of friends of the show, Manuel Saez and Rich Thrush, talking about designing consumer objects on the cheap, since we're all broke these days. What are they doing to make more affordable objects that we need in our homes and in our offices? This has been Burning Down the House on Heritage Radio Network, brought to you by Hearst Ranch. I am Curtis B. Wayne, and I'll speak with you again soon.